You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. This is this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Podcast. This week, some challenger talk. I was inspired by Aslan Karatsev, who was in Serbia a few days ago, beating Novak Djokovic, reaching the finals, continuing this tear. He was asked about his emergence in 2021, and he said, among other things, quote, "I recommend you being the media, I recommend you cover some challengers." Anna Mitric is my source on that. But I think that's good advice from Karatsev. And we always say in tennis that the margins in this sport are so thin. So why do we not spend more time looking at the players at the 1A level, especially now that we have seen this vivid expression from Karatsev, a guy who started the year outside the top 100, and here we are in late April. He'll be seeded by the French. He's beaten Djokovic. He's been to the semifinals in Australia. He's won a title. He's won a doubles title. Who is the Karatsev of 2021? Well, we found him. He is an American. He is Jensen Brooksby of Sacramento. He is only 20, younger than Seb Korda, will have you know, but he has won three challenger titles already, started the year outside the top 300, and is now 166, and basically is defending nothing because he did not play a single match in 2020, which we talk about. So who is this guy? Who is Jensen Brooksby? Why is he setting the world on fire? What is it like playing in AAA? What is it like winning three titles at this level in really a matter of weeks? This is quite a role, and we caught up with him. Here is Jensen Brooksby.
You're coming off your third challenger win. It's still April. Good job. That's good stuff.
Thank you. Yeah, appreciate it.
So how easy is tennis for you right now?
Oh, God.
Right? You got that. All right. I like that.
I heard that afterwards that Bjorn said that. That's funny. Yep.
But what? You see that clip, right?
Huh?
You've seen the clip.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah. That's fine.
I don't know. I mean, I said it as a joke, but I mean, it's kind of a good question. You know, it's kind of an interesting observation. Does tennis feel pretty easy right now?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, I feel like I have the confidence, and people know that, so they get a little frustrated right now playing against me, but I definitely have the confidence right now, for sure.
You, I think you ended the year at 307. You've like cut that by half. I think you're 166 today.
Yep.
Good stuff.
Thanks.
What's working apart from the confidence?
I mean, I've known I've had the game, but my body's gotten better. My mental focus on what I need to focus on during the match throughout the whole periods of the matches and day in day out has improved also since last year, a couple years ago. So I feel like I've just focused on a lot of good things and more consistently, and it's helped me get the wins so far.
So I want to talk about the challenger level. Let's talk about you first.
Okay.
I don't know, sort of Who are you? No, I'm kidding. I mean, I don't know. What do your folks do? How did you come to tennis? Give us some background on you.
Okay. So my parents used to play tennis as well. I don't know exactly, or my dad started playing a little bit in college and my mom was after, but they used to be taught by Joseph Gilbert, who's my head coach now. They used to take lessons from him as well when I was really young and even before I was born, I think. And then I used to play multiple sports when I was younger, up to when I was 13 years old, such as baseball, basketball, flag football, I think. So, and even track. So I just did a lot of sports. I was just an energetic guy. And then as well as tennis, soccer too, actually. But when I was 13, I just wanted to make a choice on which sport I wanted to go for. And I felt like I was the best at tennis. And I loved the individual aspect of what the sport offers. And then my parents asked Joseph if they would give me lessons. He had never taught juniors before. And he did, and we've been working for 13 years so far.
This is Joe Gilbert, your coach you're talking about.
Yeah, head coach Joseph, yep.
Go back to what you were saying before, because I think that's actually really important for tennis. I mean, you're a bit, I don't know, what are you, 6'3", 6'4"? I mean, you're clearly an athletic kid.
About 6'4", yeah.
6'4", you're 20 years old. It seems to me like this is pretty critical for tennis to take these athletic kids when they've got to make a choice and pick a sport to go full-time.
Yeah.
You played a lot of sports as a kid, you said.
Yep.
Tell me more about the decision to say, I'm going to commit myself to tennis. Because I think that's really critical for the sport. Did someone lobby you? How'd you arrive at that decision?
Yeah, I mean, it was mostly self-motivated. Like, I really wanted to go for a sport. And I felt like even though I played the other sports, I always had the most passion for tennis. And I knew if I wanted to be great at a sport, I'd need to put even more time into it than I already had. So I started homeschooling in sixth grade ever since until college for the 2 months. But ever from sixth grade through all high school, I was homeschooled so I could travel more, play more tournaments. And I just really wanted to go for it in tennis.
Tell me about Joe Gilbert. Tell me about your coach. This is someone from Northern California, I'm guessing.
Yeah, Sacramento. Yeah, we've been there. We've moved a couple clubs throughout the years, but it's always been in Sacramento for 13 years and going.
You're up and coming pro. You're 20 years old. You're traveling around. How does that work with a coach who's based at a club?
I travel with him a lot to tournaments. Usually, so it's either with him or with my traveling coach Nick Bezubchenko as well. So usually I'll go with one or the other to tournaments. We just go week by week and figure out who I travel with. But it's always one or the other. Both are really helpful.
Tell me about Joe. What's he? You've been with him a long time. What's he all about?
Yeah, we have a special relationship, to say the least. I mean, we have a similar mindset, I feel, on how we look at things and just approach the training and the tournaments, and it's definitely unique. And he's greatly helped my game. I wouldn't be here where I am today without him. And I've had five lessons a week with him since I was, I think, seven, honestly. So like every day, just we've had so many hours together. We see eye to eye. So
what are his? I don't know what. What are his organizing principles? What are his sort of philosophies? What makes him different as a coach?
He always just stays really focused and just tells me the truth, how it is, how I need to get better. Whether, like, he treats it the same whether I'm winning or I'm struggling, for instance, or however my mindset is. He always just tells me how it is, how I get better, and tough on me, but in a good way. So I you always need to have someone like that, I believe. So that's why he's really important to me.
So tell me, walk me through the last few years. I was trying to figure it out, because we talked about you on Tennis Show when you qualified for the Open in 19.
Yep.
You didn't get a wild card. You qualified. You beat Tomas Berdych. You retired Tomas Berdych. That's the last match he played. All because of you. And then what happened? It looked like you didn't play a single match in 2020. Is that right?
Yeah, that is right. I mean, so against Basilashvili in the second round, early in the fourth set, I hurt my, it was my right, like, inner elbow. I injured that. I kind of played through it, but then I had to miss a few months from that to recover that. And then I only played one more tournament that year in November, Challenger, like mid-November in Houston. It was just two rounds. And then mid-December, I had a, it was a turf toe-ish sesamoid bone injury on the left toe. So that led me to not play any matches or in Baylor for the first 2 months. It was like right before I got there too, like just a couple weeks before. So that was terrible. And then even once I got back from COVID, it was a long recovery to playing to full health. And then even after that, I had a couple other things, but I started fully, really getting to start to fully train, not really till December, really. So
you basically missed a year.
Pretty much. Yeah. From like being able to fully train and stuff how I wanted to, how I've been able to now. But that's why I feel like, I mean, it's only April still, you know? So I feel like I have so much room to grow, whether it's on the court mentally, just especially physically too, since it's only been a few months. So I'm confident.
So you commit to Baylor, but you didn't play a match. You didn't play a match of college tennis, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't even get to hit the court with a team either. So, or I was there cheering on the guys, but I didn't get to play. So that was disappointing. But
So I don't know if you saw this, this quote from Karatsev, last weekend, but he encouraged people to cover the Challenger circuit more. And, you know, it's something we talk about a lot, how there's not that big a difference and margins are small. And one level they're playing and they're you know, they're Volvos on the side of the court that go to the winners. And you go one level down and guys are like sticking bananas in their backpack because that might be dinner. What's your experience been like? I mean, when your friends say, what's it like out there on the Challenger circuit? What do you tell them?
Yeah, I mean, I know the U.S. Open. I've played it now, so I know the different areas. But I mean, I don't think about the like what tournament it is, you know, really, like whether it's a big one or the Challengers or even the Futures, which I started out with this year. I started with one, or obviously 2019. I've played them as well, and I just focus on what I need to work on, whatever tournament or match I'm playing. But yeah, I mean, the Challengers, the game difference from Challengers to ATP is not big. I think it's definitely just mental strength, physicality, little things in games, but it's not a huge difference. So,
I mean, what's the mood among the players? I mean, it is what's the vibe among you guys that are all trying to fight and get to that next level?
Yeah, I feel like players definitely can get in their own head sometimes down here, especially the more experienced ones, kind of like demons, if you say, just some. But I mean, everyone has that to some degree. It's just how you manage it and control it, yeah. I think, is big. And a good amount of players, I feel like, talk to others and like know each other well. But I don't really talk to anybody. I just stay focused on myself, and I feel like that helps.
Are you always with someone?
Yeah, I'm always with a coach on the road, whether it's Joseph or Nick right now. Usually Joseph, but I never travel alone.
Are you guys talking at all about Karat? I mean, to me, Karatsev is might be the story of the year in tennis so far. I mean, this guy, when we got out of COVID and he was playing last August, he was outside the top 200, and now the guy's, you know, beating Djokovic, and he's won $1 million already and got to the semis in Australia and won a title. Are you guys talking about him?
No, I mean, like, you mean like challenger players or?
Yeah. I mean, it seems like this is a guy who's sort of, you know, it's like Steph Curry going from Davidson to MVP.
Yeah.
This is a guy who was D2 a year ago and now is beating Djokovic. Is that name coming up at all?
That's true. I mean, not really. I mean, players don't, there's no like TVs of anyone. We don't really, I never hear any players talk about any other players or really, I mean, it seems like everyone's just pretty focused on trying to do their best, which makes sense. I mean, at least from my standpoint, I don't hear anyone talking about players, but I mean, he's definitely, but yeah, Asplund's definitely improved tremendously, no doubt. So
how much attention do you pay to the top runs? I mean, you know, in theory, if everything goes as planned, these are guys you're going to be facing sooner rather than later. How much attention are you paying to the day in, day out ATP results?
Yeah, that's my goal, definitely, is to be playing with them sooner rather than later. I don't pay attention too much. I mean, I see what happens sometimes, but I don't really pay attention to it. I just try to focus more on the things I need to do to get up there so I can start playing with them and competing with them consistently and being up there.
Is there scouting at your level? I mean, are you watching video of guys you might face in the next round?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. My coach and I often, we'll either watch the players or on YouTube, at least there's always video of guys. So I always watch to scout how to play the opponent as well as just play my own strategy.
What do you think your folks make of this? And this must be quite a ride for them as well.
My parents, yeah. My family as a whole has really been supporting me big time from back home, wherever they're at, other family members as well. My parents are happy with how I started, but I think they know I have this level in me too, so they're excited to see the hard work paying off so far. And, you know, it's just – you know, hopefully there's a lot more years left and a lot bigger things to achieve still.
You're 20 years old. These careers are longer and longer, which you got a while. You're 20 for a while too. You see yourself doing this for 15 more years?
I do. Yeah. I think the injuries I had after the U.S. Open, though, were helped me in the end, in the long run, because it made me focus even harder on my fitness and put in the effort I really need to there all around, and just appreciate being able to compete out here, and it's just definitely gotten me more appreciative and like focused on what I need to work on. So they're good for the long run, and I've gotten stronger, and we'll continue to put in the work, you know.
This is a real locker room question, but I feel like it. I mean, athletes a lot of times think in these terms. I mean, how much higher is the ceiling? Like, how far are you from a finished product?
I think I'm really far still. I feel like I have a huge amount of room I can grow. I mean, even when I played the U.S. Open twice, I was like a small kid the first time, basically. And even now, I've been a late grower. I've gotten taller, but I still could a little bit, and definitely have a huge amount of room to fill out physically and improve my mental focus and even areas in my game as well. So I feel like my ceiling's really high, and in the next few years, I hope I can show that.
Go deeper on your mental process, because you specifically you play these big points really well. What is the conversation you're having with yourself when it's 4-all break point?
Yeah, I try to treat every point like it's the same, whether it's, if you're down, like, I don't know, whether it's 1-5 low 40 or it's like a 4-all at out, you know. I just, it's trying to focus on how to play my game as well as the strategy to play against that specific opponent. Just each point of the match, no matter what, and I still need to work on that, but that's what I'm always trying to do out there. And I feel like I have done really well on the important points so far, which means in my mind that I've done a better job at focusing on that well on the important points, rather than just losing focus and just, you know, trying to make the ball on the court or something at that point, like not letting my emotions get in the way. So I feel like I've improved in that.
You're an emotional guy regularly?
Yeah, I'm a vocal guy. I let my positivity and negativity out there. So I still need to work on that, but it definitely helps me stay focused when I throw commands, or I just talk with myself a little bit too.
What else should people know about the challenger level? I mean, you're obviously, everyone's trying to get, you know, it's like AAA baseball, right? Everyone's trying to get promoted to the show. What should people know about these tournaments that you're winning?
You always have to be. You can't just lose for a match and win. So There's a lot of solid players out here. That's a good level, but I feel like the mental is a really, really important part of being able to get past the challengers and into the big events consistently.
You're 166 now. We're still in April. What's the rest of your year look like? I mean, how does this change your planning going forward? What's your spring and summer look like now?
Yeah, it's been a great start to the year for me, and we always take it week by week, and how I'm doing will decide, you know, what tournaments I play later on. So I'll play French qualies and Wimbledon qualies, I'm sure. Probably a tournament before the French Open as well, I think in Italy. But because I'm doing well, it means I'll have more chances at the bigger tournaments, which is what I'm fighting for, training for. So I'm excited to have my chances there again. You know, hopefully U.S. Open, I'm sure, as well later in the year. But yeah.
How are you doing transitioning from one surface to the other? I mean, how are you going to you played on clay and played well on clay? How do you prepare to go over to Europe, and then how do you prepare to go clay to grass?
Yeah, we don't. Our culture in general is we don't really focus on things like rankings or like surfaces, you know, and like let those things kind of get in your head. Like we'll get there a little early to train and prepare and get used to it, but we really just focus on what we can control and not external factors that are out of your control, as to not lose focus or distractions is the main goal. But yeah, we'll get there. I've never played on red clay or grass, so we'd get there multiple days early, I'm sure. Get used to it, get used to the area, which will give me the best chance to compete and win out there.
Never played on red clay or grass?
Nope.
Wow.
And I hadn't played on even green clay for 2 years actually before this tournament. And I had just Monday to train before this week, but it shows that our beliefs, you know, you can switch easily. If you focus on the right things, you just try to get used to it as well as you can, but you don't really think about it, then it's not going to be a problem for me.
Is that Joe Gilbert right there? Your game's your game, and whatever's under my feet is really secondary.
Yep. It's how we train. It's the mindset we have. And I believe it's great. Yep. It's Joseph coming out in me.
So what do you have? You go back to California and then over to Europe?
Yeah. I'm a week here in Boca, just doing fitness. I get the racket on my hand a little bit, and then we'll go back home, train for about maybe 7-8 days. And then I think we're off to Europe to get back at it.
If in fact you don't have too many challengers left in you at this rate, what are you going to remember about this phase? I mean, what's going to strike you about playing at this level?
I mean, hopefully, you know, you never know what happens. You never want to think ahead, because you want to keep doing the same things that got you to get the wins and get there in the first place. But yeah, I mean, early in the year, January, February, I hadn't played matches in so long. It wasn't easy. You know, first challenger in South Africa, I lost the first round, and there's always battles after that too. So it's just it always reminds you that you need to stay on top of it to really keep improving and jumping up levels.
So you went from Northern California to South Africa. I mean, literally, that's about as far a trip as you can take in the world.
Yep. Actually, my first tournament was a futures in Spain. And then we flew from there to South Africa right after. And we had one day in between. And then I was in South Africa for 2 weeks. So that was definitely the longest I've traveled. That was an interesting journey, but fun. Yeah.
That's a long way to go to play two sets of tennis.
It is. It is. You know, so hope that's why you don't want to just go there and lose early, or else it'd be tough. But yeah, but I've been in the States since, which has been nice, and then obviously back to Europe soon. So,
gotcha. All right, this is great. I mean, you're on a hell of a hot streak. I hope you keep it up. I hope you keep your confidence up. And next stop sounds like French Open qualies is sort of a next big pillar on the schedule.
Possibly Italy before, and then French Open qualies for sure. So I'm excited. Yep, big opportunity coming up. So I'll be ready.
There you go. You've shaved your ranking down by 50% since the start of the year. So you got to do something right.
It's true.
So this is great. Thanks. I hope tennis stays easy for you.
Yeah, I hope so too. I'll keep working on it. That's awesome.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Awesome.
Take care. Yep. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks to Jensen Brooksby. We suspect we will be hearing a lot more from him. Nice kid. Also, for the record, he was punctual. Big points for that. Enjoyed that conversation. Good head on his shoulders. He's a big kid and has a real sort of athlete's body, but also clearly has the mental makeup as well. So, it's sort of hard to exaggerate this tear he has been on. Josh Mascelles, who does good work at the ATP and is always helpful in these matters, he notes that only one challenger player in recent years has had a bigger streak, and that was Janko Tipsarevic, who a few years ago was trying to make a comeback, a former top 10 player. But Jensen Brooksby, three titles, and is the youngest player ever to put together a streak like this. He is winning more than 90% of his matches this year. We will see if he keeps it going and qualifies for one of the majors. So thanks to Jensen. Enjoyed that conversation. Thanks to Jamie, as always, for her behind-the-scenes handiwork. Keep the guest suggestions coming. We had one today, and I'm trying to remember what it was. Richard Ings. Someone suggested we do something on officiating and suggested Richard Ings. We're also working. So we're going to be looking for you, Richard Ings. We're also working with having a parent join us. It's been a bit of a trick scheduling, in part because of the NFL draft. Hint, hint. But we will have a tennis parent soon, we hope. Recent guests, Andrea Godenzi, Renee Richards, who else? Casper Ruud, Michael Chang. We've had a fun season so far, so check out past episodes. Keep the guest suggestions coming. Subscribe, leave a review, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again to Jensen Brooksby this week. Thanks to Jamie, and thanks to you for listening. We'll do it again in a week.